Hi, my name is Jarek Galkowski. Happy 2019. This is the podcast for 667percm.net, a blog posted on WordPress, where I talk about lots of things. I've had a couple of podcasts before, but this is my third. Today I'm going to be talking about composting, in particular winter composting, and how to do that. It's actually a how-to kind of thing. At the blog post where which this podcast accompanies, a lot of the stuff is written down, so it may be easier to refer to there. Plus, I have a lot of pictures, and I'll be talking about them. So winter composting is a challenge, particularly in New England, where things get cold, and the basic objective is to keep the compost from freezing. This is if you just did composting in the wintertime and you did it the way that you do it in the summer, basically you're going to end up with a block of ice. And what happens is that in springtime, once things thaw out, this block of ice becomes anaerobic and it stinks like crazy. It will eventually clear with a lot of stirring and stuff like that, but it's not very nice. There's no need for that. You can do winter composting if you follow a few rules. Composting is a reasonably popular thing. People actually do composting in the city as well. There are facilities for doing that, and they come in two forms. You can do composting in your own home in the city. You have to be sure to close things up and so forth too, so you don't avoid annoying neighbors. And people, of course, also have concerns about pests and things getting into the compost. And in the city with rats, that can be an issue. But don't blame it all on the rats. When I lived in Cambridge, there were lots of animals in there, including coyotes and things and raccoons. So they'll get into stuff too. But I think a lot of that, if reasonable care is taken, is overblown. Out in the suburbs, you probably don't want to have just a pile of lawn clippings and debris from the yard that which you throw in food. That's probably not an optimal thing, because if a family of raccoons that gets in there, not only will they consume the compost, they'll probably generally make a mess of things. They also can chew through wood and stuff like that. When you do composting, there are a lot of tips available on the web. You definitely do not want to mix lawn clippings that have been treated with any kind of chemicals in your composting. If you're going to be using this stuff, say, on a vegetable garden, that's a really, really, really bad idea. I think it's a really, really bad idea to put chemicals on the lawn or anywhere around your yard to begin with. But a lot of people do, and you have to be careful about that. Also, if you do have a lawn service, make sure you check with them what they're doing, because sometimes they'll just do it and they'll just implicitly assume it's the thing you want and so forth. But composting is pretty easy. There are containers available from towns that you can get for free sometimes, sometimes for minimal fees. And you can see at the blog our two composting bins that we have. They're two sort of truncated spheres that sit on the ground, and we have two of them going at the time. Actually, we have more. I'll talk about those at the end. But anyway, so these bins sit outside next to our deck. We always have an active one, and then one that's basically cooking down. We have one that's been cooking down that we use all summer long, and then we have the active one that's doing the winter composting this year. Summer composting is a pretty easy thing, and I talk about it at the blog. It's mostly about aeration and supplying the compost bin with enough water when it gets really, really hot and the stuff evaporates. And there are tips in there about how you can tell if you don't have enough water going into your compost and things like that. One little detail that you'll often see in recommendations for compost, not to put any meat or cheese into the compost. Certainly, if you have a lot of meat and stuff like that, this is going to attract animals more than it otherwise would. But unless you really have a lot of meat and things that you're putting in, I haven't seen any difficulty with doing this. Claire and I are vegetarians. We like our cheese, and we have three cats. And you can see a picture of one of them on the blog, Darla. And whenever you have cats, when you feed them, you have leftover food in their bowls and stuff like that. And rather than putting that separately in something like the just the waste, the landfill waste, we basically I put that in the compost, and it's never a problem really, for doing things. But anyway, that's basically what summer composting is about. The other thing I wanted to point out at the blog you'll see is we have a New England blue bin. This is a bin that's hooked up to a downspout and collects water from our roof, rainwater, and that is used nearly exclusively for the water that's used in the compost. A lot of the time in the winter it freezes, so it's not available, but in the summertime that's the principal source of water. It's occasionally used for other things too. But winter composting, unlike summer composting, is quite different. It's largely a matter of keeping friends with the microbes in your compost so that they keep the compost pile hot enough so it doesn't freeze. And this is a recurring issue. And so all the little steps that you take in doing winter composting are intended to take care of that. As I mentioned, I think if you basically were to do summer composting in the wintertime, what you end up with is a slug of frozen compost, which in spring thaw will melt and will compost, but it will also stink because it'll start out being anaerobic, and that's an unpleasant experience. So in winter, it's different. You basically don't add any water to the compost in the wintertime, no extra water. The stirring is done very gently, and the idea is to keep the microbes intact with the compost, and you don't want to disrupt them too much. Now, at the blog site, I also show what our setup for composting is. When we remodeled the kitchen, we put a little pail in the kitchen, and that collects it. We also share doing composting for First Parish in Needham with Susan McGarvey. We get the compost from Coffee Hour most of the time, and take that home, and that gets added to our compost pile. And we can keep up with that pretty well. Even in the wintertime, the compost pile cooks down. A successful one will continue cooking down, and we'll keep up with the influx of materials from the compost pile. So you can see pictures of that of that there. So like I said, no additional water gets added to the compost. And I'll go through steps actually in the blog. But I do one thing that's different with the compost material that goes in. In the wintertime, I'll make an effort to dump like excess coffee and liquids like that into the compost when it goes outside. And sometimes the compost actually is a bunch of solid stuff that's kind of like suspended or floating on top of some compost. That's the only water that the compost bin sees in the wintertime. The problem with adding excess water, which is the step that's sketched in the blog post in the wintertime, is that essentially it's going to freeze. And you're back to square one, and you won't have any microbial activity because it'll be suspended and stopped. So you don't want to do that. But some water coming into it helps things out. As I say in the podcast. So the bin, when it's prepared for winter, is prepared quite specially compared to a summer compost. First of all, the bin starts out empty. We did do this at the time when the leaves would come down. We have a lot of oak around our property. And the first thing that's done in the wintertime is that the bin is filled with oak leaves. These are whole oak leaves. I dump them in there and then compress them a couple of times so that it's bottom to top with oak leaves. And you can see pictures of the compost bins we have. These are very heavy plastic compost bins. They're actually intended to be rolled, but I discovered that if you fill them more than, I don't know, a third to a halfway, they're so heavy that you can't do this. So they just sit still. They're not something that something can easily chew through, that's for sure. But there's a lot of care done, as you'll see in the pictures, at the site, to make sure that critters can't get in. In addition to a lid that it has, there's an additional lid with rocks on top of it, so things can't get inside the compost. Keeping animals out of your compost is a pretty good idea, as I recount at the blog. I think the most outrageous thing was that Clara had a visiting grand dog here once, and which got into her compost container, and it ate some unfinished compost, and it essentially went into like convulsions, because apparently there's a neurotoxin that can be emitted into the compost food, which is not good. But anyway, so there you can see pictures of our compost bins and stuff like that. And if you pop the top right now, what you'll see is you'll see leaves. And what's done essentially to prepare the compost initially for the winter is that you put these leaves in, and you sort of carve out with a pitchfork. You can see a picture of the pitchfork that I use. It's a small one. It's very handy. It's essential for this kind of stuff. A hole in the leaves, and that's where the new compost goes. And to start it out, you combine the new compost with some old compost. Which is the standard practice. That's to inoculate it and get the microbes into it. And all winter long, the idea is to maintain that bolus of compost in the center of the leaves and maintain it as intact as possible. The leaves act as insulation. In fact, the compost gets covered by the leaves, and you gently scrape them off when you need to manage the compost by adding more or stirring it and stuff. And that's where all the activity happens initially. In fact, the compost is floating on the leaves. It's not down at the bottom at all. It's in the middle of it. Eventually, I suspect that it gets heavy enough that it presses down to the bottom. But by that time, you have enough microbial activity that that's not going to matter so much in terms of causing things to freeze. And if you gently scrape off the leaves off the top, assuming that the compost is undergoing, and the operative word here is gentle. You do want to stir the compost, but it's not like the major kind of stirring that you do in the winter. Matter of fact, I kind of like look forward to this, because in the wintertime, it isn't. In the summertime, you're supposed to stir the compost really, really well, and that can be a lot of work. And it is what it is. But in the wintertime, then I don't want to do that work, and so that's nice because you don't have to do the work. But anyway, so what is done is you put the pitchfork into the center. After you clear off the top leaves, you put the pitchfork into the center of the bolus of compost. And I just twist the pitchfork around, and that stirs the stuff. And I'll replace the pitchfork in different spots in the bolus and try to do this. You really do not want to disturb the bolus very much. You want to keep everything in contact with each other. You don't want to put in a lot of air in there, because you want to put in some, but you don't want to put a lot, because that's going to just chill things down. Very often in deep winter, when you do this stirring thing, you'll see steam come out, which is as it's supposed to be. If this is done right, that compost bolus will have a temperature in excess of 60 Celsius, and that's hot enough to kill off worms, which is okay, because you're doing things differently here. That's not hot enough to do something like, you don't have to worry about like starting a fire that's going to be well north of 100 Celsius, and that kind of thing. And so that's what's done initially to prepare the compost. Then basically I add the new compost. I have two sources here. One came from Coffee Hour at First Parish, and if you look at it ahead of time, it looks mostly consists of relatively dry coffee grounds and paper. And I put that in first, because when I add the home compost, which is wetter, it's going to soak down through that. And you'll see pictures of what this looks like when you do that kind of thing. Do not put plastic bags in your compost. They're not going to, nothing's going to happen to them, even if they're compostable, because, well, home compost don't get way anywhere near hot enough to break that stuff down. And secondly, I really have my doubts about some of these compostable bags, whether that they actually work or not. There are also, as Claire will tell you, they're also a really bad idea, kind of, because they collect bags at grocery stores and things like that for recycling, but the process that is used to assimilate the plastic from those grocery bags. Really, it gets heartburn if you feed it a compostable grocery bag, I mean, a plastic bag. And so this can mess up an entire batch of things. So, not a good idea. Anyway, so there are pictures of the compost I added from our house. And now, this is a critical step. You don't want to store the new compost, not even as gently as you did before when you had the old stuff that was in there before you added anything. What you do is you take the pitchfork and you pierce it down through the compost repeatedly, or maybe 2, 3 dozen times. And the idea is to get the microbes from the existing compost up into the new material so that it will get a kick start and start fermenting for the most part, because it's at the top of the pile. That's the coldest part in principle, although the heat does rise, and you want it to get going right away so that it will contribute to the heat. And also in general, it has the most sugars and unprocessed sugars and this kind of stuff. So it's going to generate a lot of heat quickly, and that's a good thing. I also will, if I can, when I take the leaves off initially, I push them to the side. But it's pretty inevitable that when I do that, I'm going to catch some of the old compost and it's going to be to the side. So I will kind of like very gently scrape some of that old compost onto the new stuff. And the idea is again to inoculate it. I then, after that's done, you're essentially finished. You can see a picture of it finished. And then I scrape the leaves back on to return to the state that it was. Put the two lids back on with the rocks, and the compost good part of this is done. Today, when I was out doing the compost and taking the pictures, there was a, although there are no worms visible, there was a little critter basically wintering over, probably had been on one of the leaves. And this is a slug, and he apparently finds the place warm enough so that this is a good place to hang out. And so I put him back too. Then all is left is cleaning up. Now, in the summertime, if at this point I wouldn't have closed up the compost bin because I'd use the rainwater to wash out the pail and then dump the pail of water into the compost and do some stirring. And the steps I do in the summer are also recounted in the blog post. But that's a no, big no-no because, like I said, that's going to just freeze. So I fill up the pail of water, stir it around a bunch, and then I do take that pail of water. We don't lose it. But Clara has some accessory compost bins off to the side of the yard, which are basically have chipped leaves, chipped oak leaves sitting there, and I'll just add it and pour it onto those things. And that's a good way of disposing of the compost water when it gets in deep winter. Today was I was lucky because I was able to knock the rain barrel and knock the ice clear of the spout, and I had free flowing water. But in the deep winter, generally this doesn't happen. This isn't possible. And you have to think ahead a little bit, and I bring out a pail of essentially hot water, not to put in the compost or anything, but to basically wash the pitchfork and gloves and the pails or whatever I have out there. It's easier to get rid of it out there, and then I bring it in and do a little bit more cleanup from that. And that's about it. That's the process of doing winter composting. So, like I said, there are kind of like a recount of the instructions there at the blog, and I hope this is helpful. I also have at the blog a set of links to technical papers which address home composting from a scientific and kind of engineering, waste engineering perspective. A lot of emphasis in the papers that are out there about greenhouse gas emissions, about where does composting stand? The most interesting one is Amraleyev and Sundberg and Pell and Jernsson. That one does a really deep dive into what goes on in the compost bin. And as they note there, that's a 2014 paper. People don't really haven't really studied what goes on in the compost very much. There's suspicions and some things. There's also a paper from way back in 2003 by Parent called Chemistry and Compost, which appeared at the American Chemical Society, which talks about some of the kind of stuff. But anyway, it really wasn't clear. There is, because this is organic fermentation, it's inevitable that there's going to be some methane given off in addition to carbon dioxide. This is the difference is, and it's a little difficult to explain, certainly in a blog post or a podcast, but this is low temperature fermentation. And so that means that while you are giving off this kind of methane and stuff like that, presumably the amount of methane per unit stuff consumed is going isn't going to be as high as otherwise, because the microbes basically use this kind of energy it's very efficiently, in contrast to, say, burning. And they've evolved to get as much energy out of this process as they possibly can. And anything that they can't get, it's kind of like lost to them, and it's suboptimal. So that's the reason why low temperature fermentation is attractive. But you can dig into that if you want and see that kind of thing. I've done some additional literature looks today when I was putting this together, and I have some links there, but there isn't a lot out there in the literature. There is this one recent paper by Vasquez and Soto called The Efficiency of Home Composting Programs and Compost Quality, and they're basically very, that's a 2017 paper. They're very affirming of the whole compost processing business as a means of organic waste disposal for things. I noticed some things there that, if done sufficiently by the public, this is even better than, say, anaerobic digestion and things like that in terms of its overall efficiency. But of course, the game is that not everybody either can or wants to do composting. So there you go. The compost is great for your garden. Claire has a vegetable garden, and she takes care of the yard and stuff like that, and it's wonderful for that. Things really grow well, and there's a network of people who are gardeners in this part of the world who basically, well, all compost, and they swear by the stuff. So thank you for listening. I hope this was useful, and I look forward to more of these podcasts. Happy New Year.